What you are about to hear, the views and opinions expressed on the Philip D. Blackman Show do not reflect the views of this station. You have been warned.
I'm Betty White. Listening to the Philip D. Blackman Show makes me moist. Grab your tissues and enjoy the show. Bring your mind.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Philip D. Blackman, host of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Join me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. But in the meantime, friends, buckle up, get your mind right, and get ready for the fastest hour in radio. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get it started.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Monday. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Man, it's good to see you again. Yeah, I took off all last week because I needed a moment to just kind of refine my center, I guess. And, you know, hey, man, after taking a week off and just spending time with my wife, man, I think I've effectively done that. It's been a pretty remarkable week of just kind of doing me, and I'm hoping that after a week off, we can come back good and hard and charged, and, you know, hopefully you guys can take the same week off as well. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm your host, Philip D. Blackman, and welcome to the Fastest Hour in Radio. So as a modern human species, January 2020, it was a moment in all of our lives where we saw the pandemic. It took over the world. New behaviors emerged as a result, and over, you know, 2 years of mixed pandemic messaging, conversation, censorship, and threats of all things. Threats, not just from our government, but from people that we call our friends, the people that we call our family, people who are reporting us, you know. Man, it has wreaked havoc on this nation's mental health. You know, the psychological challenges of a years-long pandemic, man, they're huge. But many practitioners, they feel that these mental health issues we're seeing, they're not really being addressed at all, and that's kind of the rub. You know, the issues that I have not read a lot about, and the one that really concerns me more, is the relation to reintegrating after the lockdowns. You know, the psychological distress that's brought on by making major readjustments in our life, and they call it the reentry syndrome. And friends, that right there is going to be what we're going to cover tonight. So tonight we're going to address this phenomenon, how it relates to people who are struggling to reintegrate back into a post-pandemic society. Now, friends, before we get there, I just want to throw out the quick house cleaning tools. Hey, man, we're available through all social media platforms, man. We're on Facebook. For the most part, they don't really dork with us too much. But we are available on YouTube, youtube.com/C/TheFilipDBlackmanShow. Guys, we're, you know, also on Twitter and Twitch at the PDB Show. And as of this recording, our very first one, man, we're actually broadcasting to LinkedIn. We finally got approved. So, hey, guys, we are looking forward to, you know, reaching out and engaging with you guys as much as we can through all of our different platforms and all of our different personas. Now, if you want to leave a comment or you want to participate in the show in any way, social media, they're great options. I always recommend it for, or, you know, where we can put your comments up on the screen, where we can interact with you, we can ask questions, or you can call the show at any time at 409-245-9753. So for all of my listeners across the airwaves, around the nation, across the globe, thank you so much for tuning in. 409-245-9753 is the number. The show is called the Philip D. Blackmon Show, episode number 278. And instead of calling it Mental Health Monday, we're calling it Brain Health Monday. We're going to change the words behind it. But the idea is that we have gone from socially distanced to socially awkward. And friends, that's what we're going to cover in this show tonight. So for our first-time listeners, you know, we've dedicated the opening segment of each show, and we call it End of Watch. Now, this is our way of honoring our fallen men and women in our law enforcement community. Last year, 2021, we had 639 officers die in the line of duty. And as of this show, we've lost 162. Now, those numbers we get are according to the Officer Down Memorial page. So if the number is skewed to the left or the right, this is the best, most real up-to-date information we have. And, you know, when you go to this page, you're going to see a very compelling statement, and we agree with it. And the statement is that when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer. It is an entire nation. You know, we honor all of our officers who serve, and we specifically highlight our first responders who've given their life in service of their country, in service of their community. We highlight a different officer every week, beginning with our Monday show. And this week, friends, we're going to begin our week kicked off with honoring Washington County, Pennsylvania Sheriff's Office Corporal Chad M. Beatty in this opening segment, End of Watch.
The Philip D. Blackmon Show proudly salutes Corporal Chad M. Beatty, 45, of the Washington County Sheriff's Office in Pennsylvania, who died on August 10th, 2022, when he suffered a heart attack after a foot pursuit of a fleeing subject. Corporal Beatty served his department for 20 honorable years and spent most of that time working in the fugitive unit. The WCSO released a statement saying, "The entire Washington County Sheriff's Office expresses its deepest sympathies to Corporal Beatty's family and friends on the loss of a friend and colleague. Corporal Beatty is survived by his son and parents to carry on his legacy. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackmon Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Corporal Beatty." Washington County, Pennsylvania Corporal Chad M. Beatty. End of Watch, August 10th, 2022. Rest in peace, sir.
I lost someone on my crew, but not on the job. The risk has always been there, even before we had a name for it. If you were struggling, you just had to suck it up and move on. But not today.
We are proudly sponsored by One of a Kind Art 43, created by professional artist Tammy Blackmon. Tammy offers free consultations and will customize your art piece to fit your needs. Each of her pieces are, as the name suggests, is one of a kind because each are personalized pieces, and once she is done, there will never be another. If you are interested, go visit Tammy on her social media pages, Facebook and TikTok, by searching One of a Kind Art 43, where Tammy broadcasts her work and she's making custom tumblers or canvas art for another satisfied customer. You can always reach out to Tammy through her email at oneofakindart43@gmail.com or call 409-234-5156. Although the prices vary, the quality is unmatched. Again, her social media pages are one of a kind with underscores between each word, followed by the word art and the number 43. Thank you again, Tammy, for another presence on this show. All right, guys. So again, welcome back. Happy Monday. Hope you guys are doing well. Man, Mental Health Monday. You know, we always talk this narrative about mental health, and you know, it's because of the stigma that we call it mental health that people just, you know, tend to think that there's a problem. There's automatically something wrong. That's why I say that maybe we should change our words and call it brain health, because that's exactly what it is. The same idea that you're going to go and get get health care for your body. You're not ashamed of it. But yet some people that go to get health care for their brain, they are ashamed of it because it's called mental health. You know, if you called it brain health, you know, are you ashamed when you go for cancer treatment, you know, cancer health or shoulder treatment, you know, are you ashamed of your physical health? Well, the idea is no, most people are not. But yet when they talk about what happens in the 6 inches between your earlobes, that gray matter, that mental health, that brain health, we automatically pull into ourselves. We go recluse and we have this concern that people are going to be judging us based off that one word, that there's something wrong up here. And you know what, that's not an issue. That's not something that we really should be chasing those birds, because we all have our struggles. And, you know, speaking of struggles, you know, we kind of look at it that, you know, the science, yeah, we've been hearing about that since January 2020, the science, follow the science. Well, you know, the science took another blow last week. You know, it was one of the most persistent but ridiculous COVID myths. It was essentially debunked by one of the nation's most foremost public health experts. His name was Dr. Asish Jha. Now, he is the Biden White House COVID response coordinator. And in case you missed it, you know, he effectively admitted that the 6 feet of social distancing thing, it was entirely made up. Dr. Jha made the admission in a video called The Path Forward for the Chamber of Commerce last Tuesday. And in the video, he says, quote, "There's really a new way of thinking about who's going to get infected. We used to spend a lot of time talking about 6 feet of distance, 15 minutes of being together. We realize that that's actually not the right way to think about it." He says that that's not the kind of the most accurate way to think about this. Just kind of glossing over, right? He says that what we know about the virus, particularly these very contagious subvariants that are out there right now, it's really about the quality of air that you're breathing around you. You know, a lot of us have been saying this for, you know, since this whole argument, this whole pandemic thing kicked off. It's the quality of air, right? You know, being outdoors, I guess, is kind of the rub. They talked about wearing masks and everything else outdoors. Well, if you're breathing fresh air, it's not an issue, but it's part of that cult of personality, that fear. But he goes on to say in that video, he says that, quote, "In a crowded indoor space with poor ventilation, you can be infected within minutes. If you're outdoors with obviously, by definition, good ventilation, you can be outside for long periods of time and not get infected. So context matters, crowds matter, ventilation matters, and that is a major new update to CDC guidance," end quote. My goodness. You know, the major problem with the CDC's new update on its guidance is it's nothing new. You know, this new guidance that they're putting out that the CDC recently released, you know, which really should look very familiar to people whose COVID response was managed by governors of states like Texas and Florida. You know, and when we're talking about these states in Texas and Florida, you know, I want you to think about the new guidance that they have actually released. So the new COVID guidance from you know, what we'll call it 11 days ago. New COVID guidance from CDC, for those of you listening on there, you can't see this graphic, but it says those exposed to the virus are no longer required to quarantine. New guidance. They say that unvaccinated people now have the same guidance as vaccinated people. Remember the whole idea that, you know, it's the vax versus the unvax. There's a pandemic of unvaccinated people. Joe Biden would tell you that shit over and over, but the CDC is now saying, hey, there's no difference. They also say students can stay in class after being exposed to the virus, as opposed to, you know, taking classes virtual online or just missing school altogether. And last one, it's no longer recommended to screen those without symptoms. You know, we had this problem when the virus first kicked off about the lunacy surrounding, you know, that everyone has to get tested, whether they have symptoms or not. You know, there is ample scientific literature from the very beginning to demonstrate that it was extremely unlikely to get COVID from indoors. You know, the vaccines, they never stopped viral transmission. It never made sense to screen people for asymptomatic transmission with a routine PCR testing. And for them to say that it's very rare for COVID to spread through surface contact, remember, that was the big one that they held onto for the longest time. You know, masks don't stop airborne viruses. Anthony Fauci even said so. The list goes on. But then we add social distancing to the list, and that's kind of where we're getting here. This isn't an anti-COVID message, guys. I'm going to bring it all back around. But the first clue that the CDC was just making this shit up as they went along, you know, when it comes to social distancing, is when they suddenly and arbitrarily changed the distance from 6 feet to 3 feet. Now, that happened back in March of 21, but most people didn't notice. And the change came after a massive amount of pushback from parents and teachers. You know, the CDC and, you know, they announced the quote, relaxed physical distancing requirements for children in school from 6 feet to 3 feet, a change aimed at allowing more students to be inside the classrooms. Well, if you're following the science and science says 6 feet is the number, we're going to change the science because of pushback from parents. Yeah, you're right. 6 feet is too much. We'll just give you 3, but you still got to stay separate. And that created a lot of issues for people, you know, especially our children, many adults dealing with the mental health aspect of, you know, losing physical contact with their friends and their family and their loved ones. You know, of course, it was a lie. You know, the CDC, they don't have the authority to mandate anything, but we gave it to them. And as we're finding out more and more, and for good reason, it's either almost always wrong. The CDC is almost always wrong, or they're thoroughly political in their decision-making. But I'm going to go ahead and put the betting money on the latter of the two. But the proof that the CDC never knew what it was talking about with this 6-foot social distancing rule, it came when a study showed that schools that implemented such guidelines, wait for it, had more cases. So just like with the pointless and damaging school mask mandates, the experts gave the nation guidance based on no real world scientific data. Public health experts are never going to openly admit that they were wrong. But if you listen real closely, you can hear them admitting that their policies did not work. And what I find even sadder, it's this grim reality that we're never, ever going to be able to fully understand the effects of the mandatory lockdowns, the mandates, what they had on us, not just our society, but as a human species. And the reason why I think this is so important and why I opened up my show the way I did is because everything the government told us, everything, it went against our very nature as social beings. You know, we share mirror neurons that really allow us to match each other's emotions unconsciously and immediately. You know, we leak emotions onto each other. That's how we function as a society. We anticipate. We mirror each other's movements when we're in sympathy or when we're in agreement with one another, when we're on the same side, and even when we're on opposite sides. And we can even mirror each other's brain activity when we're engaged in storytelling and listening. Both halves of that communication conundrum. And this view of the human state, it's directly contrary to the way that most people think about communication. You know, the old model, you know, it has a sender, it has a message, it has a receiver, feedback, and noise, right? But it's far too mechanistic and simple to describe adequately really what's going on. But it leaves out the communal nature of communications. You know, we want to achieve this state of human communion. And it's a mistake to think that most humans, they prefer this solitary life so much more of modern life imposes on us. That is the fallacy that we go with. You know, but the reality is we're more comfortable when we're connected, when we're sharing strong emotions, when we're sharing good stories. And when the government brought in these mandates that were not supported by science, but by power, they crippled us as a society by depriving us of the most important element of our lives, outside human contact. And once you follow that up with the masks that we were encouraged to wear when we did everything in our lives except destroy our cities across the nation in the name of social justice, aka free shit, but I'm getting sidetracked. For the greater humanity, we were told to socially distance with no real explanation given. And we were told to put on a mask that covers everything about us that makes us human: our face, our moneymaker, our mug, our kisser, our profile, our distinctive features, you know, so we weren't allowed to touch or to get close to each other or even see the smiles in each other's faces. And now we're speaking from behind a mask, 6 feet away, missing out on all the nonverbal cues and communication that happens when unrestricted communication is allowed. For instance, you know, masks, they often cover large portion of that person's face. If you don't know that by now, then I don't know where you've been. But why that's important is because that's what makes a person a person. And it makes it difficult for people to read lips or even process the nonverbal cues that are necessary in communication. And because that mouth is covered, it also results in muffled speech. And both of these factors, they make communication with a mask a whole lot more difficult. But additionally, under normal circumstances, your lips and your mouth, they give way to your state of mind. Where are you? You know, the subtle smiles, the frowns, all these little things we normally pick up on, but with the mask, it held us back. With your mouth covered with a mask, people that you interact with, they got to determine, in essence, how you're feeling based on very limited visual cues, which is why the mental health aspect, the mental health, the conundrum that's happened in mental health, that's why it has become such an issue, because a lot of the normal things that we would recognize and that by looking at someone, recognize something's wrong, that's hidden. You know, when speaking to other people through masks, you know, what you're seeing and what you're hearing, it's not in alignment. You know, and you know, with what you may find difficult to follow a conversation in the same way that you would without a mask, you know, and quite frankly, a lot of us, we've misinterpreted what's actually being shared because we're missing out on those things. Now, look, this is all going to make sense, you know, as we get to the mental health aspect of it, but your brain, what happens when there's a disconnect between what you're hearing and what you're seeing, is when your brain starts to jump in this overdrive where it's trying to convince you that you're hearing something that really hasn't been said. And I think that happens a lot in our country. But when this happens, when that particular phenomenon happens, it's known as the McGurk effect. So what the McGurk effect is, and this is something I read about in psychology years ago, it's a communication phenomenon that really occurs when someone perceives that someone else's lip movements don't really match up with what they're actually saying. Like if you're watching a video and the audio is faster than what's going on the screen. It's the McGurk effect. And what it does, it underscores that people, they actually use both their eyes and their ears to understand what people are saying, even if it does produce inaccurate results at times. For people like me who's hard of hearing, you know, I utilize my eyes. I read lips when I talk to people. You know, it's kind of one of the ways that we overcome things like this, right? But now, while it's true that McGurk effect, it may happen less frequently when a person's mouth is covered, it demonstrates very clearly that when a person's mouth is covered, others have lost that vital piece of the communication process, the speaking person's mouth and lips. So the act of covering the majority of your face with a mask, it can make it difficult for people to know how you're feeling or what you want to communicate. So why is all this important? Why is this history important? Because the moment that we allowed the government to dictate to us our ability to move freely for the first time in our lives, we allowed it. Our collective anxiety has skyrocketed. Do you remember when the virus first kicked off? We called this normal. Now, again, for those of you who are listening to the radio, you can't, or listen to this podcast, you don't see the graphic. But the graphic that I'm showing you on my screen is an elderly lady. She's in a mask. She is behind plate glass. I'm going to make the assumption that she's in a nursing home because we've seen countless pictures like this. And what looks like a family member, we'll call it her daughter just because it makes sense. She's on the outside, and both of them are touching the glass, but they're not having that physical contact. When all of this happened, we called this normal and we accepted it. We didn't fight it because as a society, the government, they had the momentum. They had the fear in their pocket and they forced us to do this right here. They forced us to do this. This right here is what was normal for us. You know, to embrace our loved ones behind glass. While politicians, man, they allowed COVID positive people to infect our elderly in nursing homes, resulting in more deaths than they should have been allowed. And they even gave them awards for it. See Andrew Cuomo, they gave him an Emmy. They elevated these people, these politicians, Anthony Fauci, they elevated all these big players as saviors. While the reality is they were the ones who were most responsible for so many lives lost, but No one's paid the price, and truly no one ever will. And so what did it do? That created a lot of anger, created a lot of anxiety. Because there had to be a point in most people's minds, like mine. I know it happened at a point in my life, and I'm almost certain that it happened in yours, that when the realization happened that the government wasn't making decisions because they cared about our safety, it was about power and removing a president from office at any cost. You know, what happened with COVID was, it was all political. Let's just be honest. But now, people are dead, or people suffer from mental health effects because of their reckless nature. And, you know, after the country reopened, the assumption among a lot of the sufferers is that their anxiety, it would have subsided. And they could have gotten back to some kind of normal. But what they did is they failed to understand that the current lockdown life, that was their new normal. And getting back to their old lives, that's gone. Their pre-pandemic lives, no. The new lives, the new normal, meant they're going to have to adjust to a freedom that they took for granted every day. And they don't know how to respond. In essence, I think the point that I'm trying to make is many people went from being socially distanced to socially awkward, and they're not sure how to get out of it. Socially distanced to socially awkward. That's the namesake of tonight's show, and that's also the topic of this segment, The Breakdown. All right, so why is this a big deal? Why are we covering this tonight? Because everything happens, all of my shows, it always reflects a moment of my life where something's going on. And my wife and I was having this conversation, and Tammy brought it up. She said, you know, this whole idea, you know, because we spent so much time being locked down and separated from people. She says now that she was making the statement that she has some anxiety about getting out around people, about being around people, about hanging around people, about leaving her house, because it was the conditioning that was beat into her head that everything's bad. So when you've done your job well, when you've created enough fear in people's lives and they've adjusted to this new norm and they're saying, hey, get out there and go get after it. Well, for a lot of people, they're having a hard time figuring out how to get out of that social isolation, you know. And look, social isolation, it's not a bad idea. You know, most people actually crave some type of solitude occasionally, you know, and we already know, you know, being alone, it has its relaxing moments. It can be meditative. It can be rejuvenating. You know, social isolation, however, you know, it typically, you know, it refers to a solitude that's unwanted and unhealthy. You know, when you're talking about social isolated people, you know, they lack friends that or close coworkers. They feel lonely. They feel depressed. And they can suffer from low self-esteem or anxiety because of that isolation. They have lost their ability to communicate. You know, mental health professionals, they agree that people who socially isolate themselves from interaction, they typically do so out of some kind of mental illness. And we'll, again, not calling it a bad thing. You know, we're talking about mental illnesses. You know, we're talking about anxiety, depression, low self-esteem. These are things that result from social isolation, but these things can also be the cause of it. But when no one has spoken, you know, about what happens next, you know, what happens when to be socially isolated, when it's forced upon you? What happens then? What are the effects then? You know, not when you're doing it, not when you're going recluse because you're having a mental health issue, but because you're told you have to go recluse. You know, when experts study isolation's causes and impacts, you know, they distinguish between social isolation and loneliness. Now, look, social isolation, again, it's an objective lack of social relationships. That infrequency of social contact. We need this. And on the other side of the script is that loneliness, you know, that subjective feeling of isolation. They go hand in hand, whether you want them to or not. A person can truly be socially isolated, but not feel lonely. We got to recognize that. But a person can also feel lonely when they're absolutely surrounded by people. I'm sure some of you out there have had this happen in your life. But nonetheless, isolation and loneliness, they are very much linked. In studies of loneliness, their causes and symptoms and their impacts, they shed light on the potential negative effects of the social isolation that we've had forced upon us. You know, some people who were affected by the COVID-19 lockdown measures, you know, they find that they're actually afraid to leave that isolation. anxiety, dread. You know, that's their response mechanisms, you know, returning to work or school or any other outside activities. And it can stem from a fear of getting an infection. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I've had COVID before. I don't know how it was for you guys, but Tammy and I, we got it together, and it was, man, it was a real nut roller. It did a number. It was hard to get over. Obviously, it didn't kill us. And everybody's biochemistry is different regardless of the number of vaccines or boosters you've had. But a lot of people, if they've ever had, you know, if they've never had COVID and they've had family members and friends get COVID and die or get very sick, that creates anxiety, especially if they've never had it. You know, they say some oftentimes that the anticipation of death is worse than death itself. Well, I think sometimes maybe the anticipation of COVID is the same. But, you know, these fears, they can be triggered by the change itself, the change of getting back out into the world. You know, leaving that relatively secure and stable environment of your home, it actually starts to introduce uncertainties, and it disrupts your routines that you've gotten used to, that you've integrated into your new normal. So consider this. At the height of the COVID-19 pandemic and associated periods of lockdowns, they were difficult for a lot of people, myself included. You know, from health concerns to money worries and loneliness, you know, a range of issues has placed pressures upon our mental well-being. Now, COVID has not gone away. Obviously, new guidance is saying something absolutely different than we've been hearing for the past 2.5 years. You know, many of the worst effects of the pandemic, they have passed because it's election season. But I can't help it, guys. It just, everything about this feels like it's been political, but and I'm trying to stay on task. But, you know, countries around the world, you know, they have lifted. We've seen them lift their most extreme social distancing restrictions, unless it's China. Now they're locking everything back down. But, you know, we'll wait and see how that worries out. But, you know, for some, this has been a huge relief, you know, of getting back to normal, you know, and it's brought this welcome return to the office working, you know, getting out of the house, getting away from the kids, getting away from your significant other, you know, socializing, travel. That was absolutely heavily restricted. You know, these are things people are starting to get back out there. But for others, the return actually kind of brings negative impacts of its own. We don't talk about that. We always talk about getting back to business. Well, think about those people who are still stuck, you know, and that's something we always need to be aware of. You know, for people with pre-existing anxiety, especially social anxiety, that complete lifting of the social restrictions, it actually has exacerbated a lot of concerns they felt better able to manage during isolation because they could control what was going on in their world. You know, and these effects, they can extend to people who really hadn't experienced anxiety prior to the pandemic. This idea, it's sometimes referred to as a re-entry syndrome, right? It's that anxiety that a lot of people feel as the life that they know it readjusted to the new routines. And it's perfectly understandable. Re-entry syndrome, I know I've experienced, I know a lot of you, a lot of veterans have experienced, you know, what reentry syndrome is that psychological distress that's brought on by making major, not minor, but major readjustments to life. And it has until now affected mostly, you know, like explorers, like Arctic explorers, astronauts, convicts who are being released from prison, soldiers who are returning from war. You know, they've kind of become institutionalized to what they're being a part of, whether, you know, it's they want to be or not. But now I think we can truly add the victims of the government mandated lockdowns. You know, growing up, I knew this idea as cabin fever. But for most of the non-South English speaking society, they call it something so poetic as reentry syndrome. Or it's my favorite, the reverse culture shock. There's your air quotes for the show right there. Reverse culture shock. And they use it to explain this anxiety that's experienced by people who are still emerging from their shells or from their cabins. And as they begin to re-enter the COVID-19 world, you know, after having that constant barrage of fear-inducing propaganda and vaccine guilt tripping since January 2020. You know, at first, you know, this concern, it may seem counterintuitive. Surely we should be celebrating the removal of all these lockdowns and being reunited with friends and family. And for those fortunate enough to have retained their jobs, the idea of getting back to work, absolutely celebrate it. But it turns out that this exact moment, It also coincides with heightened anxiety for a lot of people. You know, this concept of reentry syndrome, it dates back to the early 60s. Two U.S. psychologists, John and Janine Gullihorn, I think their names were, they observed that after extended periods of travel, those people who returned home, they experienced their downs as well as their ups and readjusting to what was once familiar. Explorers and expeditioners, they, you know, that returned from the Antarctica were the case in point. This readjustment, right? It's understandably more challenging for those who've experienced some kind of trauma while away, you know, soldiers returning to civilian life from a war zone, aid workers returning home, anyone coming out of prison. But until now, the psychological distresses about this kind of readjustment, it's affected relatively each and every one of us in some way or another. But now it's something with which we're all grappling to a greater or lesser extent. You know, although most of us have not really experienced such geographically remote isolation, you know, prison or exploring or a war zone, you know, or even some traumatic experience, you know, it's impossible to underestimate the impact that these lockdowns, these social isolations have had on us as a society. You know, I opened it up, you know, talking about the physical distancing rules, you know, and it's really not less threatening sounding social distancing is what they've been calling it. But truly, it's called physical distancing rules. It sounds a lot more harsh, don't it? And these were things that were levied on our human populace by governments who listened to the Chinese lapdog, the WHO, who's had a massive effect on our ability to interact with each other. You know, physical distancing. You know, that's where they forced us to avoid closer or frequent interactions with the aim of limiting the spread of an infectious disease. One that we have found out that really, truly, for most people, it's pretty mild. You know, the COVID-19 precautions included quarantine. You know, and this is where that entire practice of separating somebody who's thought to have been exposed or limited their movement, and they monitored their health asymptomatic if you were just suspected. But if you got COVID, Lord have mercy, now everybody has your medical health records. You know, quarantine, that, you know, they argue that it worked once upon a time, and they once argued to help keep an infectious disease from spreading, but we know it was a lie. You know, physical distancing guidelines mandated by our government officials during COVID-19, they've shut down or they've curtailed the attendance at venues where people gathered, schools, churches, restaurants, bars, movie theaters, sporting events, the social activities that we all have been accustomed to all of our lives was all of a sudden stopped. You know, the physical distancing measures have also caused this huge and this profound shift in our workplace interactions. You know, a lot of businesses, they adopted if they could, they adopted that work from home policies, while other people were forced to close because of the effects of a reduced consumer activity. The idea is that, you know, we just made the transition from each other to technology and didn't offer a buffer in between. There's a study that was conducted by Stanford University. And it found that 42% of the U.S. labor force was working from home full time during the COVID-related economic shutdown, minus everything, pretty much all your white collar jobs, not so much blue collar jobs, while 33% were not working at all. So what you're talking right here, that 75% of our population in the U.S. labor force was either working from home full time or were not working at all. You know, with activities related to work, you know, school, church, you know, leisure reduced or eliminated, I guess, opportunities for regular in-person interactions that are typically limited to a home environment. You know, COVID-19's, you know, the severe reduction in social interaction, it resulted in a lot of people feeling very lonely and very depressed, and they lost the perishable skill of that interpersonal communication. 2.5 years ago, when this whole COVID mess started, it would have been impossible to picture where we would be standing today. And I think that's because for the most of us, you know, we've entered unknown territory, one that really, truly few of us are prepared for or even were at the time. But when governments across the globe introduce lockdowns and curfews and other stay-at-home orders, none of us could have expected the full ramifications of it. Because here we are, almost 3 years later, and most of us are still living with the consequences. Only just about to see some of the strictest orders lifted for no reason at all. The same way that they justified putting these orders in, which there were very many, and they certainly weren't very strong, now they lifted them just the same, and still, magically, we're supposed to accept it. You know, after a couple years of this isolation and social distancing, mandated social distancing, you know, Zoom meetings and classes and the strain of work from home and the furlough hitting most of us, it hit us really hard. And this idea of socializing away from a computer screen, it feels very daunting. It feels very difficult to, you know, for a lot of people to talk to others outside their cell phones. You know, we spent so long with the general interactions that help us develop our social skills that the ability to socialize has been taken for granted. No one, it's been taken for granted as one that we should always retain. But again, it's a perishable skill. You got to work that muscle. Like any skill, socializing involves practice. Yeah, I'm not the only one guilty of neglecting my social skills in these years, but there's only so much screen time that you can stand in one day. And working or learning from home, it's laid claim to the most of the time and the tolerance. You know, socializing is key. It's key to our development as adults, as children. There's a reason that there's so many mom and baby classes. You know, we start the socializing process from the very beginning of our lives. We learn to play. We learn to share. We learn to chatter with our friends who are learning the exact same things. So how do we get past it? You know, when we're still learning to trust the outside world again, how do we learn to trust others too? With every single one moving down the same path at different paces, how do we know that we won't get left in the dust? How do we know that everyone else is doing just fine and it's just us that are stuck way back here, lonely? You know, socializing, it may never look the same again because let's be honest, will anything? You know, our only way through this is truly to keep moving forward. Find a new normal. Find one that works for us. Take it slow. One foot at a time, one step, one interaction. Learn what we love and what we do not love. Find the best way to keep ourselves going. Learn what works for us in this strange new world of politics and COVID and monkeypox and every other God-blessed pandemic that they want to throw in your face to scare the shit out of you. Because this isn't just a loss of social get-togethers that's led us to isolating ourselves. I mean, truly, in many cases, we switched to remote working and learning and communicating. I mean, if it couldn't be done online and it wasn't essential, then it was just forfeited to the circumstance of a pandemic. You know, socializing now, I think it really seems like it's a more daunting task than ever. You know, for most of us in the last couple of years of socializing, you know, it's not been anywhere on our to-do list. You know, even our daily encounters, they've been discouraged and they've been cut short. No more chit-chat at the checkout, you know, at the checkout lines in the store. No catch-ups in the school grounds and at pickup time with your kids. You know, these interactions, they may seem minimal, but they're vital. You know, sometimes if nothing else, they let us know that we're not alone. It seems impossible right now, but we are made to adapt to our circumstances. I always tell you, you are more than your circumstances, and that's why right there. Because we're made to adapt. We're resilient as hell. We have survived so much, and this right here, I truly believe, is just another stumbling block on the road to a stronger tomorrow, you know. But we've been isolated for so long that it's easy to forget that we are all in this together. We're all walking down this road together right now. Nobody really knows where this road is going, and all we can do is keep walking and hope that where it leads is better than where we came from. But that's not to say that it's going to be easy. Some people are always going to be further down the path than we are, whether we've decided to slow down or hold steady or push ourselves to catch up. That's up to us. And the people we find on our journey, they may not be the people that we hope to find, and that's okay. The world isn't the same one that we're standing on in January 2020. But the fact that we're still standing, that's what we have to hold on to, and that's what we have to celebrate. And that's what we have to accept, even though we're all starting out of the same place. Our pace can put us on very different journeys, but socializing may never be what it used to be because we are not the people that we once were. Now we got to try to find a way to keep our heads above water and keep swimming. Or absolutely just run the risk of getting swept away by the rising tides of depression and anxiety and, you know, the inflation, all these other reasons you have. There's a lot of them going on. You have a lot of reasons to be upset, a lot of reasons to be jaded, a lot of reasons to be anxious and nervous and concerned. But it's possible. I promise you, you can keep your head above water. You can keep swimming. And above all, remember, you're not alone. We're right here with you. And that right there is the breakdown. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We're going to take an extended break. I got about, this break's going to be about 2 minutes and 17 seconds. Guys, stick around, and we'll wrap up the show here shortly.
I am a mother.
A father.
Son.
Daughter.
Brother.
A sister.
I am a student.
A stay-at-home mom.
Construction worker.
Volunteer.
I am loving.
Smart.
Funny.
Generous.
Way too generous.
I am all of the amazing things you see.
But there's something you can't see.
Or don't see.
Something that I don't let anybody see.
Like when I'm alone.
In a room full of people.
I can't get out of bed.
And maybe I've gained weight.
Or lost weight.
Why do men always lose weight?
It can get dark in here.
Really dark.
Addicted to food.
The web.
Work.
Sex.
Alcohol.
Something to take the pain away.
To feel happy.
To feel something.
Anything. Nothing.
Because depression isn't a mood.
It's not a passing thing.
Or a bad day.
It's a disease.
I can't just get over it.
It feels like I'm underwater.
Drowning.
And sometimes I think you'd be better off without me.
I am telling you this. All of this.
Because I need help.
And you are my wife.
My dad.
My husband.
My kids.
My boss.
So please, don't judge me.
Leave me.
Fire me.
Please, be patient.
Don't give up on me.
Just be there for as long as it takes.
Just because you can't see it, doesn't mean it isn't real.
All right, friends, welcome back to episode number 278, Brain Health Monday, from socially distanced to socially awkward. You know, there's a distinct part of our population that, they took to that newly defined normal like a duck to water. You know, they had no problem believing the science and doing whatever they had to do for the greater good. You know, they were loyal subjects who did their government's bidding, to include calling and reporting on their neighbors who just weren't following the rules. They were poster children of what I call the elevator confirmatory experience. Check this out.
The gentleman in the elevator now is a candid star. These folks who are entering, the man with the white shirt, the lady with the trench coat, and subsequently one other member of our staff, will face the rear. And you'll see how this man in the trench coat tries to maintain his individuality, but little by little, he looks at his watch, but he's really making an excuse for turning just a little bit more to the wall. Now we'll try it once again. Here's the candid subject. Here comes the candid camera staff, three of them at least. And this man has apparently been in groups before.
All right, so yeah, I love the if you guys for those of you listening the podcast, look, go to YouTube, stop this recording, go to YouTube and type in the elevator confirmatory experiment, or even look at the the elevator confirmatory experiment. There's it's done all over social media. This is an old version, and the idea is that. A guy walks in, you know, when you walk into an elevator, you usually walk into the elevator, you turn around and you face the door. Well, what happens in this controlled experiment, what they had is they had people who would walk in the elevator and face the back of the elevator. They were all part of the experiment while the one person, you know, who had no idea what was going on. What it was is a test of peer pressure. These slowly but surely, you know, with all these people facing the wrong way, and he knew it was the wrong way, he eventually turned and went the wrong way or looked the wrong way as well. Why? Because he didn't want to feel, he didn't want to do something different than the majority. And that's kind of the crux of human behavior. They will modify, they will do whatever they can do to be a part of that great majority. So they can be on the side that they believe is right while they're shaking their finger at everyone else is wrong. And yet we wonder how Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany were so successful. You know, here, I don't know about the rest of the world, but I know here in the United States, man, people are more than willing to go on the offensive with their attacks of people like me who was willing to take a step back, remove the emotion, examine everything that's coming in, everything that's said, everything that's done, every subtle, retractable, non-apology that was issued because the science is always changing. And when they knew good and well there was nothing scientific about what they were doing, well, they knew, you know, from the elevator confirmatory experience and the ASH experiment that for the most part, they knew that human beings are going to follow the masses just so they don't feel uncomfortable. Think about that. The government manipulated that knowledge brilliantly because they successfully scared people into a panic. And it showed people's willingness to dehumanize anyone who wouldn't wear a mask in public as they shouted you down for not wearing a mask as their nose was sticking out over the top of theirs, or they would just completely remove their mask altogether so they could shout at you more clearly because follow the science. Everybody watched this. Nobody stopped it. Because the court of public opinion had already condemned everyone who did to do exactly what they were doing. Anyone who wasn't in lockstep with the narrative, they were to be shouted down. They were the next existential threat. These people had become so entrenched in the fear and the hate that they lost themselves and they rapidly forgot what it meant to be a free American. I was talking to an acquaintance some time back when Texas first decided that the federal government's mandates were stupid, not really based in science. You remember when Texas was called that Neanderthal state with promised spikes and death that never happened? Yeah, they don't want you to remember that either, but I'm getting sidetracked again. You know, I remember the conversation because he talked about how it was really hard to think about being around people again. And that's kind of, you know, again, we always bring it back. You know, one of the things that struck him as he thought about the possibility of someday being in a crowded room with other people without a mask on, you know, like he said that he spent a very long time longing desperately for such a day. And now, you know, he even catches himself having this panicked response as he thinks about it. He said he don't want to be afraid of that, but that's the one thing he wants, to be free again. And yet he said that, you know, he has this desire, this part of him that knows that now reacts in ways that he didn't used to. Terror. That's the word. That's the word he used, terror, because he's worried about getting back out into the population. You know, a lot of people are in the same boat because they were forced to be asocial as well, at least in physical terms for over 2 years. But as a result, you know, a lot of people, they're finding that any in-person social interaction, they find it to be completely awkward. It feels like they have to relearn how to sit in a room with another human being. Even dreaming, something as simple as dreaming, where it should be peaceful, it's been transformed in unprecedented ways with a trend of nightmares about social distancing. People were really scared. You know, but people's social muscles, right? They've atrophied. You know, they're struggling. They're struggling to learn a new way to communicate. Really, it ain't a new way. It's just an old way that they've forgotten. But fortunately for all of us and for you, if you find yourself to be one of these people who's struggling to get back out there, I want you to understand something. Your muscles, your social muscles, right? They're fairly resilient. And it counts from places that you know, have been less affected by COVID-19 suggests that it really doesn't take long for you to return to some version of a social normal. It will happen, but you have to get there. You have to push it there. It's not just going to happen from the safety of your home. You're going to have to get out of that shell. It's okay. I promise you. It's not as scary out there as you may think. You know, there are some hiccups to be expected along the way. So it's going to help you be prepared for them. You know, it's not surprising that a lot of us may actually, you know, may be feeling socially rusty, you know, as we get ready to step out there into the world again. You know, we've all, to varying extents, we've experienced loneliness and social isolation during the pandemic, which is two things that can be linked to cognitive decline in very specific ways. I mean, for instance, people with smaller and less complex social networks, they tend to have a smaller amygdala, right? Which is the brain's emotion processing center. So the chronic loneliness that normal shut-ins do, as opposed to the forced shut-ins, what it does, it affects the level of hormones that's associated with stress, social bonding. You know, one effect may be a greater propensity in depression. But in general, lonely people, they tend to be more paranoid, more negative. You know, prolonged isolation like we've been going through, you know, it affects memory, verbal recall. Social creatures, humans included, they need plenty of interactive stimulation to keep their brains in good order. So if you're finding more words escaping the tip of your tongue these days, you know, the lockdown may actually be playing a part of it. For a lot of people, the only real conversation, the only real physical interaction they've had for the past couple of years was from their significant other or their children. And the conversation is usually kept somewhere within the familiar conversational patterns. But they recognize their conversations with friends, it's actually a little bit more shaky or awkward, as it requires a deep dredging up of a once familiar language, right? Now, of course, it has to be, you know, as individual circumstances, you know, they vary widely, but so too is going to be your transition back into the post-pandemic social life. You know, an unemployed, medically vulnerable person who spent their entire period living alone, they may find that next phase more disorienting than a financially secure person living and working from a big shared house. But overall, some of the behavioral changes, they can reverse quickly with a return to more typical social patterns. But Daniela Rivera, I read a paper that she did. She's a biologist out of the Universidad Mayor in Santiago. And she believed that the physical damages in the brain, such as connected memory, they won't budge so easily. So with the shrinking of some parts of the brain, memory function, it can be impaired for years following periods of social isolation. Just letting you know what you're going through right now. If you're having a hard time recalling those words, those memories, and nothing has happened, then this is right here. This is the scientific explanation. You know, but it's not just that, it's also our ability to connect easily with other people. But the shrinkage in some parts of the brain, right? The memory function. You know, that can be scientifically proven that it can be impaired for years following periods of social isolation. It's not just how our brains may have changed, however. You know, psychologists, they're seeing more adults that are starting to report stress over their social interactions, ranging from not knowing how to bookend interactions without a handshake or a hug, something that was so normal. You know, how do you think about that? When you interact with someone, do you go in for the hug or do you go in for the handshake or the fist dap or the elbow dap or the kick like Kid and Play? What greeting do you give? You know, it's that social awkwardness because you don't know, right? People, you know, normally you walk up and you shake hands with somebody. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. They're like, they want to change it to adapt. that that causes some awkwardness for a lot of people who are not used to that type of behavior. But you know, certain groups, you know, are particular sources of worry. And what I mean is, this situation is especially thorny with people with a social anxiety disorder. You know, if you already had that before the pandemic, it's likely heightened even now. You know, maintaining the progress, it's really important, because once you're not around people, as we haven't been, it's very easy to slip back into some old patterns. But there's also concerns about school children, you know, who've fallen out of sync socially during the start and stop uncertainty of our lockdowns. And it's those grade school children at their age, their brain's still developing and refining that neuronal connectivity. And it's a critical phase to develop our social abilities that's going to define their interactions with their peers. The prolonged isolation, it could lead to some develop a social phobia. And evidence is suggesting that that's absolutely true, what's happening right now. Elderly people, you know, they're more likely to be living alone, and they're less comfortable with the technological devices and preserve social contact. Have you ever seen a grandparent try to figure out how to do FaceTime? I mean, they don't have that ability. You know, I believe there's going to be some changes that could emerge in some vulnerable people during the re-socializing period, that hyperactivity, that intolerance, that irritability, that anxiety, among some others. But the pandemic increased levels of depression. We're seeing it. We have been seeing it. We've been talking about it on this show for months. Anxiety, stress all across the nation, around the world, and caused distress for many people already living with a mental health issue, including eating disorders and OCD. In other words, after recent challenges, you, like many others, have experienced flare-ups and symptoms, or you feel more unwell, and they may have trouble adjusting. But during most of the pandemic, we were told that's unsafe to be physically close to other people, including your loved ones. Now, as you start to consider that more in-person socializing, your internal alarm bells, they may be going off, telling you that public spaces and people, they are unsafe. Now, if you also have a chronic health issue, you know, you may need to be more cautious of catching that virus. Absolutely. And you got to figure out a way to balance that risk versus benefit, the restrictions of them going away. But if you experience the stress that's triggered by people or public spaces or restrictions, may have been a relief, providing a legitimate reason to avoid triggering situations. However, avoidance usually increases anxiety the longer term, and it can make it harder to adjust to the restrictions that have been eased. But guys, I promise you, it is going to be better. It is going to change, and there's a better life for you outside your home. And that right there brings me up, guys, to our last commercial break. We're going to jump right into the one final thing, and we're going to wrap this show up, friends. We're trying to give you tips on how to cope with the anxiety of getting back out there into your life. Stick around.
I can't breathe. I have migraines, numbness, weight loss. I live with it every day. The illness that I'm suffering from is an anxiety disorder, and it deserves to be treated like any other illness. But it's not.
All right, so we're kind of giving you the science behind all the reasons why you may be suffering some type of emotional social anxiety, social awkwardness. And one of the things that I always tell people anytime they're going through something, some type of mental health or brain health episode, is always tell them, man, the first thing that you got to do is practice a little self-kindness. You know, I've said for years, anytime that I've ever failed, it's not the criticisms and the jokes and the laughter of everybody else at the expense of my failure. I am my biggest critic. I am harder on myself than anyone else. And chances are you're probably the same, unless you're a narcissist, right? But the idea when you're starting to step out into this new normal, or the new old normal, I should say, is that self-kindness. You know, the words that you would give to someone else who's struggling should be the same words that you give yourself. I mean, you might notice that there's a range of responses into getting out in the public, you know, including the joy and the celebration of finally being around people, having people around you. But to the new anxiety of these new behaviors and these new actions of others, this uncertainty. You know, it's important to remember that everyone is going to react differently. And your thoughts and your emotions, they're absolutely valid. It is okay to feel anxious about socializing or traveling again. So if you experience, you know, any self-criticism around your response to new business as usual, you know, try reminding yourself that you're living through an unprecedented situation. There is nothing wrong with you. You are having a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. You know, the second tip that I'd like to give you is to keep your lockdown coping strategies, right? And what I mean by that is your COVID restrictions, you know, they might mean somewhere in your life that you have found coping strategies or routines that you normally would not have found before the pandemic. You know, these ways of coping, they could still be beneficial for us. You know, after all, they helped you get through a really challenging time. So take a moment. I want you to think about the strategies and the routines that you would like to continue. The ones that give you a sense of stability, of purpose, of relaxation, fun. You know, if you started going for a walk, you know, each morning during the lockdown and you found it to be helpful, you know, keep it up. You know, you could also, you know, it could also help to think about bringing back some habits that you enjoyed before the lockdown that you haven't been able to access. Perhaps having a coffee at your local cafe or taking a part in community groups or just, you know, just hanging out with people. You know, the overall goal is to get back out there. Feel normal while you're doing it. And it is possible if you go to the next one, right? To go at your own pace. You have to move to a point that is comfortable for you. You know, so this is where I recommend, you know, you try to make a list of the different activities that increase your anxiety and you order them from the least to most distressing. And it's likely that catching up with a friend at home, you know, it's going to be less stressful than going to a large social event like a concert. But as you go out into the world, I want you to start with an activity or situation that caused you the least distress before taking on more challenging ones, like going to the store, riding to the store with your significant other or going to a convenience store on your own. That is something that should cause a minimally distressing event. You know, do something easy, and the more you do it, the less fear you're going to have. You know, what it does, it gives you a chance to get used to that anxiety that you have in response to that world outside of your home, and in practice your strategies to manage it. But you know, part of going at your own pace is learning to say no. If people are pressing you to do more than you feel comfortable doing right now, or to break restrictions, it's okay to set your boundaries. No, I don't feel comfortable with that yet. I mean, if it's helpful, you can even suggest an alternative that works for you, like catching up at another time or another location, one-on-one maybe. But the last one that I want to tell you is probably the more practical one, right? You know, I want you to try to focus on the positives in your life, because if you're going through anxiety and you're, you know, the awkwardness of being a part of civilization again, you know, what were you looking forward to? Think about it. What were you looking forward to when you found out they were going to ease? You know, perhaps there's people you've missed or even doctors that you'd like to start to see again in person instead of doing the telemed. Or if you're in my case, where a doctor actually refuses to see you face to face when you need that in-person consult, you know, these are things that, you know, that for people like me who is looking forward to going and seeing a doctor again, these are things that helps establish my why. I mean, maybe you can work from an office again. Maybe you can go to a job, to a building and see your colleagues while still having some days where you can work from home. You know, taking some time to think about the positives of easing restrictions and getting back out there, it can help with your anxiety. You just got to be willing to put forth that work. I mean, it's normal to feel both excited and anxious at the same time. I get it. You know, as you start reintegrating into the world that you shut yourself off from, or that you had it shut off from you, the important thing is, ladies and gentlemen, is to remember, take new situations at your own pace. Figure out what works for you. Friends, helplines, counseling, mental health professionals, they can support you. They can assist you in taking on the new challenge. And guys, we have gone over our time, but that's okay because, you know, I think this show was important enough, but that's going to do it for us, man. We're going to wrap it up here, friends. Thank you so much for tuning into our show that seeks to not only provide that middle ground analysis, but to remain consistent to that inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. It's going to be okay. The world is a lot safer than what social media and the drive-by media and politicians are going to tell you. You just got to be willing to get out there and go find out for yourself. I promise you, it's not that bad. So until next time, friends, thank you so much for your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like you, our country would be a very different place. I've said it since I've been doing these shows, and I will continue to say it as long as I have a heartbeat, we are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. So as always, friends, don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. If you love your freedom, think a veteran. And if you love your peace, think a police officer. And if you see a first responder, they're still doing the job, guys. Give them a high five, a handshake, and tell them job well done. God bless each and every one of you, friends. God bless the United States of America. Catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time on our radio stations, on our podcast, on Spotify, iTunes, iHeart, or right here on social media as we're doing our live broadcast. Guys, thank you so much. Have a happy week. Lord, what in the creeks don't rise. We will see you Wednesday. Until then, friends, take care of yourselves. My name is Philip Blackman, and I'm out of here.